to another episode of Defend the Nest. My name is John Broadbent. Sorry, I haven't introduced myself on previous episodes, I just realized, and isn't that something that hosts generally do? Yes, so welcome to Defend the Nest, the podcast. My name is John Broadbent. I've been writing about this team since their reinception in 2015. I'm the guy with the funny accent. Used to write for Anaheim Calling. Sort of fell into this in terms of being their prospect guy, and that's how we are today. Enough about me. Sorry, it's been a hot minute between episodes. Where we last left the girls, and the last episode I did, I believe we were in the midst of a losing streak, or maybe I didn't even cover that losing streak. No, I did. Yeah, that was slightly depressing. But new month, and a girls team that has been threatening to explode on offense finally has, putting up a six goal game in the most recent one, and keeping a four game point streak. I'm gonna just go out on a limb and say four game point streak off the top of my head alive. I'm not even looking at the schedule, I'll look at it now. Let's see, started the November month with a loss to the Eagles. Even though that didn't seem so long ago, I'm struggling to remember. I think I remember they had a one goal lead. And is that the game where Solberg had a bit of a brain fart? I can't remember. And then the next game they went into Henderson and absolutely dominated them. It took a while to get going, but that was, I believe, the turning point for the ketchup bottle unloading. As per the esteemed Timo Solani's expression, when a team is struggling to get goals, you can feel it coming. You can see the results are almost there. And then when the bottle pops, the bottle pops. The Henderson game, let's have a read over that. What did I say? Nick Briard started the scoring, and then it was followed up by Tristan Luneau. Yep. Oh, that's right. He did this very beautiful, like, move into the lane and shoot that one. And then, of course, the Meshack line. Nice goal where Sasha did a pretty mean move on that one. Proving that a three-goal lead is never safe. The Silver Knights immediately came back with two goals to make it 3-2 going into the first intermission. In the second period, the Eagles got one back. I can't even remember how that one worked. But it was, again, the Meshack line, this time featuring Justin Bailey. And it was another Justin Bailey special, essentially. More on him later. And third period, it just all went downhill from there for the girls. They just kept piling them on. In the end, it became the final score is 6-3 for my post-game notes. I think I made comment on, I felt it a bit rude that Judd Caulfield was taken off the Jan Misak line and swapped with Justin Bailey in an attempt to get Justin Bailey hot, which it worked, but I just felt bad for Judd Caulfield. I'd like to see some consistency there, and I think I comment on that on another post-game notes most recently as well. The whereabouts of Tyson Hines at that point was still up in the air, and as we now know, he was injured, but he's come back. I note on, was this the ketchup bottle moment? Because the girls had struggled to score since blowing out the Firebirds 5-0 at the start of the season. And this November has been very good to them. Moving on to the next game. Was that against the rain? Let's have a look. Yes. So, back home on it for a home and home, where they first had the rain visit them. Very typical physical Ontario versus San Diego game. This is the game where Noah Warren scored his first AHL goal, and looked very happy doing it, and very happy for the guy. He's had such a good season. He is looking, I'll go out and say this, he's looking better than Tyson Hines right now. I mean, it's not fair to Hines because he's been injured, but he's got more points than him currently, and is looking the more likely call-up, even though, as I've noted, and I'll get to that as well, there are others ahead of them. So this game against Ontario was scoreless after one. No, it wasn't. They got two. Ontario scored two goals, that's right. And yeah, the goals weren't looking good at all after that first period. They just weren't really looking themselves. They were just very inconsistent and not confident and just not like they've looked for the last couple of games, which is frustrating to me. It's as if they can look like a well-oiled machine on the road and then turn around and look completely different at home. I don't know what it is, but hopefully that's turning around now with these most recent wins at home. The goals got one back during the second period, thanks again to Meshack and Pastajoff. Former goal Glenn Gordon continued to kill them as he got another. Well, he thought he had another, but it was waved off due to a high stick. And that was the goal where Kelly Klang exited the game. And looking at it, I can't see what happened. And we now know he left because of personal reasons. But he also looked down, and I don't know. Yeah, so I don't want to speculate because it's none of our business. But there was a weird sequence. And yeah, so this is the next goal. The goal scored was the Noah Warren goal. Nice little wrist shot that beat everybody through traffic. And so that was the score heading into the third period, where it was a lot more back and forth. The goal's basically just hanging on. But a buzzer beater, not in the grand sense of the most recent buzzer beater we've had, but a buzzer beater from Tim Walsh got us to overtime. And sadly, in overtime, the rain took it. Just annoyingly, it was like a counter rush where the girls had actually done really well in the overtime so far, but it just got a bit too overcommittal. I forget who it was in particular that I think took it upon themselves a bit too much and left it open for the counter rush, and that's what happened. So my post-game notes on this one was just regarding concern for Kelly Klang, but noting that if he's out, that means Tomasz Suchanek would be coming up, and he did. And also noting that I'd expected Duck to come down soon because the Ducks forward group was getting healthy and crowded, which did happen. We'll get to that. The Ontario-San Diego rivalry is very much alive and kicking. That was a very physical and fun game to watch, especially the last minute tying of it. And yeah, standings update, which won't be relevant now. So I'll move on to the next game, which was the other home and home game with the rain, but I did not cover that one. I managed to catch up on it, but I didn't post the article, so I'll skip that one. It was a girls' win. They took the win. Where are we? Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, skip that. I'm so lost. So, home and home, girls beat Ontario 6-4 at home, and then turned around and got beat in Ontario 4-3. That's the one I just covered. Sorry, I missed the one at home. And I did start recapping it, but didn't post the article because I just ran out of time. So, moving on. After that, they played Bakersfield, and that was a fun one. That's the second most recent one in memory. So, if you were at that game, I'm supremely jealous because it looked like it was a lot of fun. And it was one of those games where you just loved, it was very much like a traditional good versus evil kind of thing. Not that I'm a homer or anything, but yeah. Is it me or is that Bakersfield rivalry getting more and more testy every year? Yeah. Hence why my call of, haha, suck it, Bakersfield. Yeah. So, that game. How did we start? It's punk rock night. Tyson Hines returned from injury. Huso started in net with Suchanek backing up. And did we have Colangelo for that one? Yes. This is the first game of Colangelo back from the Ducks. Yes, that's the one. First game back of Colangelo back from the Ducks. So, big line changes in order to make room for Colangelo. Not as big as the most recent game, but he got placed on a line with Mushak and Pastryov, because, as you would. The top line was still Carpenter, Bailey, and Phillips. Third line might have Washington and Caulfield, and the fourth Sidorov, Gaucher, and Howell, which meant Cal Burke had to sit. Defensive pairings remain the same, just Hines coming back in for Connor Smith. And yeah, so first period we had no scoring, but it was physical and there was a lot of opportunities. And it felt like, even though the goal started well, the Condors took over and controlled play for much of the period right up to the end of it. And shots were 13-10 Bakersfield. And you didn't need to, yeah, I show it in the shot map. You didn't need to look at the shot map to know that the girls did not have a great period. Second period, Roland McEwen was engaged to drop the gloves because he had previously laid what BJ McPherson referred to as a clean hit. I don't really see it clearly. It just looked like a board, just a standard finishing a check on the boards, just particularly heavily. And that injured the Bakersfield player, Kevin Dineen's the coach. Yeah, so he was out for the rest of the game. Bakersfield took some energy from that fight and opened the scoring. But that was also due to a shorthanded goal. Yeah, that's right. It was a bit of a partial break the other way. They had an overly aggressive penalty kill that really gave the girls trouble all night. What? The girls' power play having issues? Yes. Yes, so surprising. Moving on, Condors doubled their lead, and it wasn't looking great. Just as their speed was just absolutely killing San Diego, they had no answer to slowing down their speed through the neutral zone. And it's weird, because on the road they can do that. I've seen them do it against top-tier teams like Colorado. But just at home, I don't know why, they just don't execute. Or it's just a confidence thing, I don't know. Anyway, there was a lot of penalties all throughout that period, and that really disjointed play as well. But as play returned to 5-on-5 after one such penalty, the goals got one back. As, who was it? Tristan Luno spotted Tim Washey skating through the slot, and his just perfectly timed shot pass was tipped to the top corner. So that made it 2-1, and that's how we went into the third period. Which again, at the start of, Bakersfield looked the better team. Stian Solberg drew a high sticking call. And he's very good at those, because he seems to like go engage physically, loves those reverse hits, loves pissing off players going against him, and cops all sorts of retaliations, which generally or should get called. That power play was killed though. But as we return to 5-on-5, I'm pretty sure. Justin Bailey, I'm sure this was not a power play goal. Or maybe it was. I don't have this thing open. Should I open that up? Let's have a look. I was correct. Not a power play goal. Yeah. He sort of just seemed to turn in the high slot area and just wind up and just fire a hard slap shot that beat the Bakersfield goaltender, who I think I multiple times uttered fuck this goalie during that game. Sorry for the coarse language. But he was annoying. But the Condors came back with an immediate push and retook the lead via one of the Pitlicks, who surname is unfortunate but hilarious to me. Yep, and then I noted that the officials pretty much looked a lot the other way for a lot of various obstructions which could have been called, including a lot of interference. So I remember, it's just a constant thing. They don't seem to keep track of interference at all. But here, the turning point, which I would love this to be a talking point. It's never going to get out to the major circles, but the San Diego Gulls received a 4-minute major power play, a 4-minute power play due to a 4-minute major penalty on the back of an attempted Michigan, where the stick of the player attempting the Michigan copped Tyson Hines in the face and drew blood. So by definition, a Michigan is always going to be a high sticking penalty if they connect, because their stick is above shoulder height, or generally is, to get that. And just, I know that there's people that it's a very, what's the word, debatable topic, polarizing topic. People that love to see it in the game because it's fun to watch and it requires a lot of skill. Or the people that just don't want it there because it's breaking with tradition. And is regarded by some as showboating. I think it's fun to watch when it's on your team, personally. But having it scored against you sucks. So, like most things in hockey. So I was happy to see it denied and also result in a 4-minute power play, for which the Gulls desperately needed at that point of the game. It seemed like Bakersfield, with the adversity, were still going to overcome and hold on to their lead, but as per formerly mentioned, the very traditional and proper buzzer beater, courtesy of Sam Colangelo, where the goal had to be checked by the officials even after everybody'd celebrated, just to make sure it had been put in before the time expired, and it was deemed to have gone in with a tenth of a second left. Sorry about all these messages appearing on my computer, sorry about that. So, tie game, and we go to overtime. In overtime, I wasn't looking forward to that either, because the Gulls haven't really had a good overtime record this season. They haven't actually won one yet. That would all change, though, as some back and forth play general, it felt like they weren't really going to do it again this time either. But Justin Bailey, possessed as he was, took it upon himself to, and I think I put this on Twitter, hit the NOS button and just absolutely blow past the Bakersfield defenders from one end to the other. He literally did start from his own red line, his own goal line, and just blow past all the defenders en route to the net. And beat the Bakersfield goaltender through his five hole. I don't even see how he did it. And give the Gulls the 4-3 win. So basically, if you're going to take a lesson from this game, it's don't attempt a Michigan. Or at least don't attempt a Michigan if there's players within the vicinity that you could accidentally get with a high stick. So yeah, my post-game notes, I noted that there were way too many penalties, and it's been an onward trend since the start of the season where the Gulls were the least penalised team, and it was very nice to see, or one of the least penalised, but now they're quickly climbing the ranks. They're no longer the least penalised team. They sit, at this point, they sat 24th, which is still pretty good, but it just shows you how many they've taken in the last couple of weeks. Meanwhile, the power play still sucks. And what else did I say? That Justin Bailey, and so basically in a game where they may not have deserved to win just the way they were playing as a team, they weren't playing that great. But it was one of those games where two or one player had an individual standout game that just sort of grabbed and stole the win. Generally, that's a goalie. That was Lukasz Dostal years ago. Gulls fans will remember that. He would steal us games that we had no business in winning. And yeah, this game was definitely a Justin Bailey and Sam Colangelo game. Colangelo looked rusty and looked to me like he was trying to do too much at points. And I'll say on the next game's recap, I felt the same thing in terms of he's still trying to get back into game shape, I guess, because he's been off with the Ducks for 2 weeks. He'd been sat for 2 weeks. In this game, I felt like he was shooting too much or taking too long with the puck, where there was a teammate open. And then in the next game, I felt like he was being too unselfish with the puck and passing it when he really should have shot it. So hopefully he finds the happy medium in the next game. But yes, this was all Justin Bailey and Sam Colangelo getting the win for the goals. And yeah, I've already talked about how the Michigan went bad, so that was my other post-game note. That brings us to the most recent game, yesterday's one against the Abbotsford Canucks, the lowly Abbotsford Canucks. And for those of you that are looking at this as a potential measuring stick, because they're the former Calder Cup champions, most recent Calder Cup champions, this is not the same team. Yes, some of the players are still there, but they've been hit majorly by injuries and call-ups. I think they're playing, as it was mentioned, they're playing their fourth or fifth goalie on the year. I haven't even looked into Ty Young's background. I meant to, but I didn't have time. But he clearly wasn't AHL caliber. He did put up some pretty good stops, which, and I meant to make note of that. Like, you know it's bad when you can, when the opposition broadcaster is even giving you kudos for the saves you're making. But yeah, so they're not the same team, and if the girls are going to take advantage of a team that's down, now is the time to do it, because they will be better once everybody's back for them. And on that note, so Ville Husso was given the back-to-back start, which is not normal for the AHL, but at the same time, he's NHL quality and he's used to having more games. So it wasn't like it was a big deal for him. But it also shows that the girls don't feel entirely confident in Suhanuk right now. Because that would have been an opportunity to give him a look. But I guess they're all about the wins this season, which is fair enough because they haven't done that in the past. So anyway, first period. Justin Bailey starts the scoring with a patented all speed goal, with the goals on the penalty kill, once again taking too many penalties. He blew past the Abbotsford defender, deflecting a pass along the wall and just blowing right past him, and using his speed to cut in on the net and shift the goalie at the same time. And I can't even describe how much skill that takes, especially when you're going that fast. So yeah, he is feeling it right now, and you can actually see it. I mean, I love to see the emotion on his face when he plays. He is a highly emotional player. The Flow TV stream cut out for me momentarily, so I did not see what happened, but when it came back, Jan Meshack was in a fight with the Canucks' Joe Arntzen. So from what I can piece together, there was a hit from Meshack, possibly. I didn't see it. So if somebody can tell me what happened there, that'd be great. And as play resumed after the next TV timeout, the girls had the puck in their own zone. Noah Warren sent a very long headman pass up ice, which hit Judd Caulfield going into the Abbotsford zone. He came up against the defender and pretty much just squeezed right by his boarding check that was meant to dislodge him from the puck but did not. And then also had the presence of mind to just cut in right away to avoid another check, and immediately fall into a perfect shooting lane to which he just absolutely roofed it. So that was 2-0 goals, a beautiful, beautiful goal. Things settled down for a little bit there, but then didn't take long for Caulfield to score again, as the three of he, Sidorov, Gaucher, and he set up another goal. Sidorov was kind of a passenger on that one, but I'm sure he, on the play, I'm trying to remember, I think he drew some attackers. It allowed Gaucher some space to pass to Caulfield coming to the right, and Caulfield just wired another one, so 3-0 goals. And that's the score heading into the second period. And it was just downhill from there. You'd expect the Canucks to come back after one period, but they didn't really. It was just all San Diego. Ryan Carpenter got one. And who happened? More penalties. there wasn't any more scoring in the second other than the Carpenter goal, but it seemed to go quite fast. There was just a lot of penalties. There was a lot of back and forth penalties, and more from the goals than the Canucks, which again is concerning. But they also made their supposedly highly ranked power play look pretty mediocre. And once again, the penalty kill looks very good. So 4-0 to start the third. Again, more penalties. But as play returned to 5-on-5, they got another one as Sasha Bastjov was set up, I think with a cross-crease pass or cross-ice pass that he just wired home. At this point, the officials felt they were losing control of the game, and they gave Stian Solberg and Nathan Gauthier matching roughing and misconduct penalties, along with the Canucks' Joseph Labatt and Joe Arntzen. So that was their night's done. And apparently Gauthier wasn't happy about that. I couldn't see that on the screen, but that's what they were saying. But yeah, the fire seemed to go out for the Canucks after that, and the girls just grabbed another one. Thanks to Nick Briard just stick-handling his way into the zone all the way to the net, but being dislodged from the puck just before getting to the net. But Roland McKeown recovering it, firing shot on, that bounced back to the point where he skated all the way to there, recovered it, and just sent it right back to Bailey at the start of the net by himself to put it home. So his second of the night. Made it 7-0 goals. And yeah, putting up back-to-back wins. So on my post-game notes, I mentioned they need to clean up the penalties again, like still need to clean up the penalties. Noting, I went back and checked. In the last six games, they've taken 6-3-2. So one game they only took two, which was nice. 10, I think that was the Ontario game, or one of them. 5-3 penalties. For a total of 29 in six games. Compare that to the start of the season where that first game against Coachella, they only took one penalty, and then 3, then 5, then 2, then 6, then 5, for a total of 22. So it did kind of, it proved me right in terms of they've been taking more, but some of those games earlier on in the season were surprisingly bad as well. I'll give myself, I'm not entirely right in terms of they were squeaky clean at the start of the season, but still, it's been getting worse lately. I've just commented on hot and cold players. Justin Bailey is red hot, and you can see that there's no stopping him right now. And Tim Washey's been slowly and quietly leading the team in points and goals. Though I think Matthew Phillips is leading the team currently, but he's up there. He has 7 goals, and it's tied for first with 4 other players and goals by first year players. Doesn't seem fair because he's out of college and not a rookie by traditional standards, but still first year in the AHL, so that's fair. He is also tied for second in rookie scoring of 13 points in 13 games. The goals finally have a player in the top 20 in scoring, which is their points leader, Matthew Phillips. He sits tied for 7th with 6 other players with 15 points in 13 games. But in terms of Cole players, Sidorov has been very quiet lately. At the end of that game, he did start to look like his old self, trying to take the puck and do everything by himself, essentially, which can be annoying, but in that game didn't matter because they were already up 6-0 at that point, I think. So it was good to see that, but I feel sorry for him in terms of other goals players have always had a partner that they've been put with and they stick with. So, for example, Meshach and Pastajov, Carpenter and Bailey always seem to be together, or Carpenter and Mijatovic, which seems to be the current partnership. Caulfield seems to slot in with Meshach and Pastajov a lot, but he's being bounced around a lot too, which is, you know, not fair, but it's the nature of things, I guess. And I just always felt like Sidorov never really had a line he could call his own. He's always bounced around and seems to have just been given wherever he can go. So, proving to my point earlier where Bailey was moved to the Pastor Joff Meshach pairing to get him going, and now he is going and he's been moved off that pairing. I feel like Sidorov needs the same treatment just to get him going. And then you can put him wherever you like. For my money, where do I think he would fit? I'm just looking at the line again. He is, I mean, in the defense of the coaches, he is a bit of a nomad in terms of skill set. He could really gel with a number of different players. If I wanted to try him anywhere next, it would be with Carpenter and Mijatovic. So that's my closest idea of where he would fit. That's where Burke was placed after returning to the lineup. But I would prefer to see Sidorov there. Burke could easily go on the fourth line, just swap with Sidorov, essentially go on the fourth line and provide some veteran presence and size as well as speed. And then who? And Tristan Leno, because someone's asked me on Twitter and I forgot to reply to them, sorry. What's with Tristan Leno? Because he's only got 5 points in the last 13 games, or in 13 games so far this season. And he's gone stretches of 2 and 3 games without getting on the score sheet, and that's not like him at all. But you know what? I'm not worried about him because he hasn't looked out of sorts. He hasn't looked like he's been any kind of like down on his luck or anything. He's just playing a team game. He's contributing where he can, helping out the team, and quietly going about it, being the best player he can be in terms of being a team player. Sure, he could try to stand out and try to do everything himself, which he has done in the past, and especially he seems to do that when he feels like the team needs a spark or he's frustrated with how things are going. But at this point I like how he's playing. If San Diego starts to struggle and they need somebody to step up, then yes, I'd like him to revert back to trying to do everything himself, which we know he can. But for now, I like what he's doing, and I don't think he has to worry about being passed over on a call-up. Speaking of which, so I put in the post-game notes, I don't mean to jinx things, but should the Ducks face a span of injuries and require some call-ups, I think it would go in the following order. So for forwards, quite obviously Sam Colangelo, because he's only just come back down. But next would be Matthew Phillips, clearly because he's the team's leading scorer and he was one of the late cuts from Ducks camp. Then after that, it gets interesting after that. Tim Washey is definitely the next most obvious pick because he's been quietly near the top of scoring for the team all season. And all those, as aforementioned, rookie scoring totals he's got. And he's also just fucking money in the face-off circle. Sorry, dropping another F-bomb. But after that, it's my boy Judd Caulfield. He deserves it. He's been in the top goal scoring for the team all season. He is playing a beast of a game. Not every night. That's the only problem. He's not consistently doing that, but he's getting there. He's doing it more often than not, which is good. And with this win streak, I reckon he'll be doing it more often than not. So he could surprise some Ducks fans. I don't want it to get to that point where he has to be called up because there's 4 other guys ahead of him. That would mean the Ducks goals would be absolutely picked clean. But he is next after those 3 players. All last season I was saying Sidorov would be the next call up, but he has been so quiet to start the season that he would still not even factor after Caulfield. I'm not even sure. I think it would be Pastrnak first and then Sidorov. But having said that, I know it was his first year last year, so it took him a while to get settled, but after the All-Star break, he really caught fire, and I think that'll happen again this season. So just watch out for him after the All-Star break. Defense, the obvious choice is Leno, but as mentioned, his numbers haven't been that great. Currently leading the scoring by defenders on the goals are Nick Briard and Roland McEwen, both of which are on AHL deals. So if either got called up, they would have to be on a PTO. It would be a really cool feel-good story for Nick Briard to get his first NHL game, though, at age 30, because I love that guy, and he's great, and I'm so glad he came back. And then I had to make special mention of Noah Warren, because he has been playing so well this season, and he's starting to get some attention. Even before the season, I think Ducks fans were like, Noah Warren is looking more ready than people expected him to be. Meanwhile, Tyson Hines has been quiet and had to play for injury. He's still dependable. I would absolutely back him for an NHL call-up right now. But he's not putting up the numbers like Noah Warren is, or Nick Briard and Roland McEwen. And yeah, that's all I've got to say on all those things. Somebody also asked, what are my thoughts on Stian Solberg so far? He is, at the start of the season, he had the odd rookie mistake, which he's quickly tidied up. He's doing really well in that regard. But I am still noticing, especially during stressful situations and with play down low around the goals net, he is really bad at locating loose pucks. Like, he seems to just want to play the body first. He's looking around him, but not down. I don't know if that's a concern for getting hit in retaliation for all the hits he puts out. But if you just watch him next time, when there's a puck scramble around the goals crease, he's never really looking around for the puck. He's always looking up at the other players. Yeah, so that's my only concern for him. He's going to have to really fix that, because it's more often than not, it's ending up in the back of the net. But I am noticing he's getting way more confident. Last year, we didn't see any of those paint. Well, we did see some, but not on a consistent basis. The patented hits that he's known for. And he's been dishing those out at will this season. I feel like it's probably going to become very common knowledge that if you're coming down the goals end and you're looking to line him up, he's going to hit you right back. And that's what he does. And it's fun to watch. And he's drawing calls because of it, because players are getting pissed off with him. And yeah, next step is just looking for those open ice players coming through the zone, and I'm sure that's only a matter of time too. He's already laid a couple of them, but I think there's going to be more to come, and it's going to be some really get you on the feet kind of stuff. So yeah, in answer to that question, he's coming along. He won't be ready next year. So I think someone was saying that they would prefer the goals trade Minchikov and open up a space for either Solberg or Luno. Yeah, Luno won't be ready by next year. He's going to need another year in the AHL. After that, he should be ready. But you think about it, he's only just first year out of his draft, second year after his draft. And also, European players can take a while to adjust to the North American ice. Yeah. All right, I've gone long on this one, so I'm going to let that one go. Let this go now. Feel free to fire more questions at me. Tell me if I'm talking too fast. I think I might have on this one. Sorry. And you can always find me on defendthenest.com. That is defendthenest.com. On Twitter or X, defendthenestsd. That is defendthenestsd. I also plug my stuff on Reddit and on Blue Sky and on Facebook. And I am planning on coming across to watch a game live, as I've said in a previous episode. That is happening next season. I'm just not sure when. So, with that, I'll leave you. Thank you so much for listening. And please share and tell your friends, even if you just want to laugh at my funny voice and accent. Thank you.